Welcome to this edition of a Knights Party Roundtable Discussion. So,
yep. Jason Rob here.
Thomas Rob. Here. And so, we're going to discuss.
We're going to discuss. This Sunday, it is, well, one week from now, we will be in the midst of our Congress. Yep. Knights Party Family Congress. And it's starting this coming Friday. And it'll be 3 days of fun and educational and being inspired and motivation. And
relaxing. Beautiful retreat here. So,
It's not too late for people to come. So even if they want to officially register when they get here, they can send us an email or give us a call and, you know.
Just come on down.
Come on.
Yep. So, show up.
But anyway.
So anything big going on in the news this week? I hear there's a couple people running for president. What's going on with those guys?
I don't know. I think there's a guy from New York named
Trump.
Yeah, and then another lady from New York from Hillary Clinton.
Yeah, let's not call her a lady.
It's not a lady.
A female.
Female.
So anyway, that they are running for president of these United States, as they say.
Well, I will say that one of the words now that you hear often is the alternative right. And basically, that's a word that means if you're a white Christian, you're the alternative right.
Yeah.
And that's really what lately you've been hearing Hillary Clinton and some of the other liberals.
It's no one organization.
Huh?
There's no one
organization.
And it's
like, just a representation.
It's like saying conservative, Republican, or Democrat. Everybody's not in the same pocket. But nevertheless, those, for the most part, those people are coming opposing Hillary Clinton, lining themselves up with Donald Trump, would be categorized as white Christian America.
Right. And that's the alternative right.
Well, yeah. And what irritates me about the whole thing is that they're implying that there's this like takeover of the Republican Party by alternative people, when the fact is, no, the Republican Party was taken over by
neocons.
Liberals basically in the disguised as conservatives with traditional values, and they're not.
Right.
So there's no takeover. There's an
attempt
to reclaim the Republican Party.
Yeah.
And this whole, and of course, you know, any campaign, they're going to try to pull people, you know, out into the limelight. So, you know, of course, Trump and his campaign, they're trying to pull out as many black people as they can to say, oh, there's a lot of
there's black
a lot
person in your rally. Get them up front. Yeah, get them on the stage.
Support from the black community. I mean, we know that's just not true because, I mean, there's a few, you know,
smart black people who understand.
A few black people out there, but you know, for the most part, I mean, the majority of all non-white people are in the Hillary camp.
Geraldo said on the news just a little bit ago. I think it was yesterday. He said that this presidential election is going to come down to demographics, come down to race.
Yeah,
and we've been saying that for a long time, and we were labeled as racist for saying it. But now it's so obvious that everybody has to admit that white people as a whole, not every white person, there are many white people who are just in the ignorant camp, but as a whole, white people who love their traditional values and heritage and culture, love America the way they knew it, understood it, and the way America was, did exist for many years, those people are, for the most part, supporting Trump. And so Trump's supporters are way up into the 70% percentage of that population. And most of the non-whites are supporting Hillary Clinton. Way up in the mid-90s for blacks, same with Asians and same with Mexicans, same with Jews. They all are the high 70s, the 80s, or 90% of those people are supporting Hillary Clinton. So the race is coming down to us versus them.
Right. And, you know, and it's all primarily for one reason and one reason only. They want a wall built.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a lot of other good things that he says, but it comes down to get a wall built because we don't want all these foreigners in here, you know?
Right.
And, of course, you know, that's not taking into consideration all the refugee resettlement and things like that, but they don't want that either because they know that's coming and they see what's happening in Europe. And they've heard Trump say that, you know, they need to vet, you know, people from the Middle East and so forth and stop that from them from coming in and everything. So it's all comes down to race and borders.
Right.
Well, and the thing is, you know, we've been saying that as more and more non-whites are coming in, we are obviously seeing the trend that we're seeing right now, but we've been saying that literally you're going to see at first, symbolically, you're going to see a race war.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you're really seeing. You're seeing a race war in the voting booth.
Right.
Because of the fact that when people of races are going to vote, the vast majority of white people are going to be voting for Donald Trump because he is considered the candidate of white. You know, regardless of what his views is, he's considered a racialist and a nationalist. And then you have Hillary Clinton, who's representing the non-whites. And so it really is a race war in the voting booth. And it's starting to now to stem over to race war in the streets because you have organizations like the Black Lives Matter and other very communist-leading organizations that are attacking white cops. They're out there just attacking white people in general.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is eventually going towards that. And so that is what is obviously is happening. And we've discussed this before, that if Trump does become president, I think you're going to see more of a violence streak than if Hillary gets president.
A lot more polarization between the races.
Right. And that's nationally, but you look in the heartland of America, if you look at the maps of the United States in generally, the majority of the states, vast majority of the states are for Trump,
mm-hmm.
you know, and you have a very, very few states that have where most of your population's at that's going for Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we've been talking about, the balkanization of America, the heartland of America. People are wanting to preserve their culture and heritage and their nation. And that's why you're seeing this the map of the United States where it's being balkanized.
It's funny because the election is going to be decided upon several states. They say it'll be the Florida, in Illinois, California, and I think
the New York, some of your eastern states.
There's one other state too. They will determine, maybe New York, they will determine the election. And that's true. But what people fail to realize, it's major cities in those states that determine those states.
Exactly.
And the major population, the large cities, concentration of large percentage of minority votes determine where the state goes, and that determines where the election goes.
Right.
So we're really being voted out of our own country.
Well, for example, in California, it's a majority non-white state.
Yeah.
But if you look in your major cities, yes, they're for Hillary. But you go out in the suburbs, the rural areas, other parts of California, they're all for Trump.
Right. Where the political power is meaningless compared to the overwhelming power of the minority vote.
Well, that's why you've had, you know, the voters in California time and time again have voted, you know, they voted against affirmative action. They voted, you know, against aid for illegal aliens. They voted against gay marriage, you know, and I mean, they voted very conservatively, but then you get a couple large cities there in California and then the state legislative body, and they just trounce what everybody else in California wants. And then you get that Ninth Circuit Court, and then, you know, if by some miraculous means, you know, the state of California itself votes for something conservative, then you got the Ninth Circuit Court that's just like, well, I don't care what you say.
Yeah, the Ninth Circuit Court, I don't know if you heard of this or not, Jason, we discussed it on our show this week, but the Ninth Circuit Court, they just ruled that if a pastor of a church wants to give counseling about the sin of sodomy to a young person or child
anyone
in his church,
under the age of
he'll be, he's violating the law.
Right.
He could be arrested and imprisoned for giving Christian counseling to a young child, or anyone under the age of 18, as Rachel says. And that's unbelievable. Can you imagine a forefather sitting and tolerating that?
Yeah. Well, and that's the thing. The Ninth Circuit, it might as well be in a communist country. I mean, they don't follow the rules of the Constitution. They make up their own rules. And so, yeah, but again, this is all the stuff we've been predicting for decades. We've been analyzing the trends, not only of the migration of our people, but the laws. And it's all what I see is the downfall of the country, downfall of the government. Mm-hmm. Because right or wrong, if you no longer have federal districts, if you no longer have states in general, really following the path of the laws of the Constitution, then that's where you're seeing your examples of balkanization.
Yeah.
For example, right or wrong on the issue, let's say of the marijuana issue. You know, we see that.
Right.
You see Colorado and you see California, ballots in Arkansas, Washington, all these states, you know, saying we're no longer following the federal laws that says that it's illegal. Now we're going to let the people vote on whether or not marijuana is legal or illegal. You know, right or wrong on the issue. But I'm using that as an example. So when you have now states saying, well, now it's legal, we don't care what the federal government's doing, that in and of itself is, you know, putting their finger up against the federal government.
It has something to do with guns.
Yeah, guns.
Yeah, yeah. But marriage is like that. But the states don't have control.
Right, but no, I understand that. I'm just saying you're looking at examples of where you do have states, right or wrong,
don't care what the
government. Yeah, we don't care about the government and the Constitution. Yeah, the Ninth Circuit basically said we don't care what the Supreme Court doing. We're going
to Colorado has all the hippie people left California. Yeah. You know, they got out of California because they destroyed that state.
Right.
So we destroyed California. Now let's go to beautiful Colorado and see how long it takes us to destroy it.
Right. But what I guess what I'm getting at, I'm not making a stance on.
No, I understand.
What I'm getting at is this divide. You're getting this divide, and more and more of the divisions happening. That's where you're seeing this balkanization, because basically you're having people saying we're not following the terms of the federal government anymore. We're doing our own thing.
Right. Yeah.
Right. You know? And if it's on an issue that's really important, like gun rights or like gay marriage or things like that, then that's an example. Which, I mean, that's why I like the verse. I think it's in Romans that all things work together for the good of those who love God. Because it's like, even as screwed up as the Ninth Circuit Court is, and all these, different decisions that they come down with, in the end, it's going to lead the way toward more conservative states. Likewise, saying, well, if they can tell the U.S. Supreme Court to, get lost because we're going to do what we want here, then I guess we're going to do what we want too,
Right.
It's like kind of back to that states' rights type issue.
Yeah.
And if states' rights, if they're going to go with the liberal decision, well, that's up to the state, the people in the state. And if they're going to go with the more conservative type viewpoint, that's up to the state, It's not up to the federal government. And, but, we've been talking for a long time about, most likely the Southwest would be the first to, pull away from the federal government and maybe claim some sort of, not necessarily sovereignty, but just, independence. And, especially with the La Raza and the Hispanics and so forth.
Well, they're sort of doing that already for the Ninth Circuit Court. They're kind of doing their own
thing. Well, that's what I'm trying to say, is the Ninth Circuit Court is kind of leading the way for that.
Right.
And so I would, I would be willing to bet that, the Southwest will be the first to, pull away and kind of make it a definite stance, and the Ninth Circuit Court's going to, they're going to be leading the way on that.
Yeah. Well, and we've done stories. I know, I can remember 10, 15 years ago, we were putting in the Crusader, the magazine for the Knights Party, where in some of your border towns and New Mexico and Arizona, where some of the towns themselves were flying the Mexico flag above the United States flag.
Right.
And basically, in a way, saying, you know, unofficially, we're sovereign.
Right.
You know,
right.
And so,
I mean, do what we want.
They're openly displaying that. And so, if they've already had that mindset, then all they're looking for is what else can they do to officially say, we're no longer part of the United States.
Right. And as much of that angers us to see that, it really is going to help enhance the balkanization, which is an absolute necessity with the invasion of aliens into our country.
Right. Well, there's got to be a line in the sand drawn. Whoever draws that line, you know, whether it's us or whether it's them, there's got to be a line drawn and a clear demarcation that, hey, these people are not for white people. You know, it's like, okay, get it, white people, wake up, figure it out. These people are not for you. They're not going to be for you. They're not on your side. They don't like your constitution. They don't like what your country used to stand for. And they don't want any part of you.
And it's good that you have those, especially in the Southwest, where you have these activists, your non-white activists that are adamant that we are not going to speak English. We're not going to do anything except speak our own language. Because in a way, that does make that division.
Right.
Because then you have white people just getting furious because you have your non-whites coming in saying, we're not speaking English.
Right. And we are. For, I hear a lot of people, conservatives, say that we need the English-only laws in the country. And we are ones that are, we've always been opposed to English-only laws. Because we don't need to have, we need to keep our identity separate. Because if we can blend too easily and they cross too over, it gives really power to the federal government.
I mean, it'd be one thing if it's a bunch of white people who are like, hey, we don't need to print 50 languages at the voting booth for every language from Europe, you know. But when you're talking about white people versus non-white people, you got to look at the, you know, the philosophy behind.
Well, that's why when you have your massive, you know, immigration coming in from your European countries, you know, the 1880s and Civil War in 1920s, that those Europeans, those white Europeans, wanted to be blended in American culture, you know, because they all had the same culture, the same ancestry. And so they wanted to speak English and they wanted to adopt
the
language.
Learn the American way.
Yeah, and so that was a good thing, you know. But if you have all these non-whites coming in speaking English, then that basically brings down your defenses.
It helps blur the line.
Yeah, absolutely. So, but that's the way it was. Years ago, when people came here from Germany and so forth, they wanted their kids to speak English. This is America now. Speak English. So this polarization is good. I know people say, well, polarization is bad. But polarization is good. It's necessary. And it will give further life to our people. And don't fall into the trap of those people thinking polarization is a bad thing. It's a good thing. And Donald Trump's candidacy is helping to create that polarization. We're not implying that Donald Trump is a white nationalist or anything of that nature. We don't know what he'll do when he gets if he gets elected. We don't know what he will do. What's important about Trump is how he is perceived. By that is what's important, is how he's perceived by the aliens in our midst. And that perception is what can launch the growth of the white nationalists, or the new term they're using, alt-right, or the Knights Party, the political power.
Well, and the thing is, I mean, Donald Trump, he is saying a lot of things. The reason he got so popular is about, you know, building the wall, you know, the borders and America first, you know, bring our jobs back to America and all that. Everything he's talked about is what the white nationalists, the white racialist movement have been saying for decades, you know, that we need a strong border. We need to build a wall. We need to not do this trade and or the trades and tariffs. We need to implement that again. We don't need to have a free trade. Everything should be America first. Right. And so, no, I often think that when you have people like Donald Trump and his advisors from the beginning, I truly believe that those type of people have seen what, if you want to call it, the racialist movement have been saying for years, you know, because they know that that's what vast majority of the white people want, you know, and they know that those, the white people want those. And so they know that if they had someone that might be able to echo those same type of viewpoints, that could propel them in the national scene.
Right.
You know?
Well,
and that's where Donald Trump, why he was propelled in the national scene, because he did give him legitimacy when he was talking about these things.
Right.
And he had the support because they knew for years and decades that's what the vast majority of the people wanted.
And he's not saying anything any different than what we've been saying.
No, definitely
not. Or David Duke's been saying. Or Willis Cardo, like Willis Cardo's been saying. And many of but the thing is, we didn't have the money to force a way into the national spotlight like Donald Trump had.
Right.
We could be easily pigeonholed and ignored.
Well, you know, and also, you know, you did see a certain rise with, you know, the Ron Paul campaign. And then the Tea Party, which, you know, kind of got off track and so forth. But just those two things in itself, you know, showed that, you know, hey, there's a lot of eager people out there that want some change. And, you know, Donald Trump was able to kind of gather all of that together into one, you know, effective strategy.
Right. And he made it racial. The Tea Party and Ron Paul, it never made it. It was never racial.
Right.
He made it racial the day he announced we're going to build a wall and deport illegal aliens.
Right.
That made it racial instantly.
Right.
And that they said that was the end of Donald Trump. He announced he's running for president. He's going to crash and burn the same day because of his extremist statements. And the only thing it did is lift it up in higher estimation and grab and attention was drawn towards him. And therefore, support was drawn towards him because people do want those things. And it's like I heard somebody on the news yesterday and they mentioned about, well, you know, Donald Trump said that when he first came out, he said that he wanted to deport all the illegal aliens. They said now he's softening on the issue. I don't know whether he is or not. I'm not in his head. I don't know. I know that politically you maybe rephrase your statements. But the point I'm getting at is past that. The point I'm getting at is they said he wants to deport all the illegal aliens. And then this man of authority says, and that is so ridiculous. We can't do that. That would be totally impossible. And what, really? Really impossible?
Impossible?
That's what they said by sending a man to the moon. No. You know, it's a lofty goal. Let's go for it.
And there's already been history, recent history, of that's been done before.
Yeah.
You have Operation
Clean Sweep. Was it called Clean Sweep?
No,
I was thinking Wetback. Operation Wetback.
That's an administration. You know? And I think it was before like 1.5 to 2 million.
Which is a large population back then.
Illegal aliens. And because what people don't understand, a lot of them are going to go back themselves.
Right.
It's not like, okay, we have to gather them up. Well, yeah, there will be some.
Stop the money train.
Exactly. They'll gather them. You say, okay, no more free food, there's no more healthcare. Employers, if you're hiring illegal aliens and you know that, you're going to be fine, severely fine. They're going to deport themselves back naturally.
Yeah.
And that's what people don't understand. You're not going to have to gather every single person up.
You're not going up and down the street with an address and start knocking people's doors and home to the boxcars.
Exactly.
You know, you just start program, take away all the incentives and all the candy.
Have a giant May Day rally, you know, nationwide, you know, just have a few, you know, secret organizers go in and have these national rallies and marches everywhere, and they can be waving their Mexican flags, and then they'll be like, we got them.
But now they're protected.
They're all gathered in one spot.
Yeah, put a fence around them. But now they're protected by the Obama administration.
Yeah.
You can't deport those people.
Yeah.
It's like there's some guy comes on TV, every now and then, I don't know his name, but I see him off and on Fox News and so forth, and he's a spokesman for undocumented workers, and he's on TV. And I'm thinking to myself, how come that guy's not arrested when he steps off the platform of being interviewed? How come there's not a Border Patrol agent locking him up and hauling him to Mexico or to the jailhouse?
Yeah.
Why isn't that happening? And, of course, they claim we're in fear of being deported. You know, like those that family that came at the Hillary convention.
Yeah.
You know, oh, we're afraid of being deported. We're afraid to be deported. You can't be too afraid to come on national TV.
Yeah, you're surrounded by thousands of police.
Yeah.
You know,
can't be too afraid.
You're running a voter campaign in Nevada to try to get 400,000 Mexicans. Not necessarily illegal, but Mexicans who just haven't ever bothered to, you know, register to vote, trying to get them registered to vote. So, yeah, you know, but anyway.
Well, it's all coming down to demographics. It's all coming down to race. We are about to be voted out of our own country. Now, whether Donald Trump pulls it out this time is possible. What he does between now and 4 years from now, if he's elected, will determine whether he will get reelected or what will happen. I don't know. We don't believe Donald Trump is the answer, but we do believe Donald Trump is, can open some doors that maybe some other people can walk through.
And we can also have to realize that, you know, yes, God is in control, and God uses people, uses events, uses circumstances for his ultimate goal, you know? And so all these things, you know, are basically at the will of God. You know, he's allowing things to happen. And so I think sometimes people think, like you said, Dad, that if you're pro Donald Trump, that we're saying that he's the answer and everyone's going to go home after he wins. And we're not saying that at
right,
all.
No.
I mean, we know that there are things that we disagree with him on, you know, but the thing is, he has that aura around him of people thinking that he is a white racialist, a white nationalist, you know, and he says, might as well be wearing a Klan robe. You know, that's what some people think.
I've seen memes on the internet with him in Klan robes.
Yeah.
And Nazi arm bands and all bit.
Absolutely. And so that's the thing. I mean, I know he is very soft, you know, on your homosexual issues and stuff like that. But the fact is, he is getting the conversation that we've been saying for decades, you know, the major issues about race. And I think that's vitally important. I think that's something where we as a party, as individuals, can use that for our agenda, because that legitimizes everything we are doing now.
Right. And, you know, I've seen, you know, over the years, different groups and organizations and little movements and stuff start up and come and go and up for a few years and then they're gone and so forth. But they don't have the staying power, you know. And that's, you know, what's really important about the Knights is that, you know, we do have a long track record. We do have a long-term strategy. We aren't dismayed by different, you know, current ups and downs and what could be perceived as setbacks and things like that. Things don't catch us off guard. You know, we understand that, you know, all these things are going to play out. And that's why, as an organization, you know, part of our long-term strategy is to remain focused. Don't get sidetracked on, you know, this little issue or that little issue and so forth. Just stay focused on the fact that we're working toward, you know, the establishment of a new America. And, you know, everything from the school, the Christian Research and Development Center, and training young people, and our the work we do with our youth corps, and you know, working to, you know, mobilize people in their communities, and members getting involved in as volunteers in their community and influencing people, getting into positions in different, you know, associations or other political parties that they can kind of steer the conversation and get that grassroots organizing experience and so forth. You know, all these things all put together will help put us into the position, because, you know, I growing up, Dad, I always remember you hearing you say that, you know, we don't know when, but God is going to open a window of opportunity. And our responsibility is to be ready for that window of opportunity.
It's only going to be open for a short time.
Yeah, it's going to be open for a very short time. And so our responsibility is to be ready and prepared. And that's, you know, I think that's what the power in the Knights Party is because, like I said, we see people just come and go and organizations start up and they might even last 5 or 6 years, you know. But they're always trying to reinvent the wheel, I guess you could say. And we know that, you know, the Ku Klux Klan saved the South. It saved white people. It saved Western Christian civilization
in America.
It's got name recognition.
Nobody has to explain what it is.
Nobody has to explain what it is. We just have to use our effective long-term strategy and stay focused and be ready and prepared for that window. And
plus with that, Rachel, well, I'll expand a little bit more on that, is with all that, you know, we have always said that the Knights Party has to, because one of our goals is we have to be the voice of the white resistance movement.
Right.
We have to be the voice. And the Knights really has become the voice of the white resistance.
Right.
We literally, every week, we have major newspapers, major TV stations coming out doing reports of not only the Knights, but what our opinions are
right.
on the political scene.
Right.
From the Associated Press to the major network of Channel 4 England,
South
Africa.
From Brazil coming next week.
Right.
From Brazil. I mean, so we have major networks coming in. Absolutely.
And we're not saying that, you know, that other organizations or other spokespeople, you know, aren't ever interviewed. I mean, they are. But the Knights is continually focused on. And there's not ever, you know, it's not like just all of a sudden the Knights gets, we're doing an interview.
Did it with Mother Jones.
Yeah.
News is it? Mother Jones Magazine?
Or? Yeah. There's a couple, yesterday. I guess.
And that's a major.
Yeah.
It's a liberal.
Yeah. But
it's a major.
It also has a lot of readers and people, a lot of white. First off, their constituency is mostly white, of a liberal bent. But nevertheless, we've always said that we can't get caught up into necessarily liberal or conservative labels, because both of those labels have betrayed us. The focus has to be on race. And even though people, you know, a lot of times just kind of cast aside all liberals as being not for white people, the fact is they're living in their gated communities and they don't want to be around non-whites either. They just have a little, you know, a different viewpoint maybe.
Because they view us as being hateful.
Right.
And they don't feel hateful inside.
Right.
They don't feel like, I hate black people. I want to be left alone. I don't want to live in the ghetto.
Right.
I don't want my daughter or son to marry
right.
in them. So I'm going to move into my gated community to be safe. But I don't want to hate black people.
Right.
And if they perceive, so as the media tries to portray the white nationalist movement as people who hate minorities, and if they perceive us as that way, then we can't reach them.
Right.
But they recognize that the core of the white nationalist does not hate minorities.
Right.
Now there's... Find some people on the internet, in YouTube, and say crazy and wild things. But the core of the white nationalist movement, especially the Knights Party, we don't hate black people.
Right.
And so those white liberals who you say, who live in their gated community, they can be reached when you understand we do have a message of love and concern for all people.
Right. And then, you know, and then also, you know, when they understand, because a lot of them are, you know, liberal from the standpoint that they don't like the multinational corporations or, you know, the Wall Street type deal and bailouts and things like that, that, you know, so often the GOP gets labeled as friends of big business and stuff like that. So they don't want any part of that. And you know,
the Trans-Pacific Partnership,
right.
another thing
so,
that's
I mean,
a big concern.
Yeah. And so we do recognize all of that. You know, that's why we're not conservative. We're not liberal. We're American patriots that understand that, you know, politics is racial, free trade is bad, cleaning the environment is good. We don't want cheap, labor brought into the U.S. You know, we want
our children protected.
Yeah, we want our children protected. I mean, there's a lot of, you know, core values that I think that they can be reached on.
Right.
And that's why you have so many former white Democrats and libertarians and so forth voting for Trump, because he's saying what white people want to hear.
Well, and also, you know, when you have people like Trump and like you said, Rachel, these libertarians and Democrats voting for Trump, and you get these non-whites and the massive non-whites crowd and those that represent them, such as Hillary Clinton, when they're calling those people, the vast majority of white people, racist, mm-hmm. bigots, and saying Donald Trump's a racist and bigot because he wants to build a wall and all that, then, like we said, it legitimizes. But then you have your average.
Plus, it makes the labels not effective.
Well, that's what I'm getting to. You get your moms and dads out there sitting at home, your good families, and they're thinking themselves, well, they're calling Donald Trump a racist and bigot just because he wants to build a wall and want to protect our country. I guess I'm a racist, too. I guess I'm a bigot, you know.
Yeah.
Subconscious, right. That's what they're thinking. There's Refugee Resettlement Watch, okay, is a big organization who's trying to put the spotlight on refugees coming, so-called refugees coming to the United States, and they're non-whites. But they talk about that very same issue about word labels, and they're talking about Donald Trump. I'm just going to read this really quick. It says, when you think about it, all they have to do, call these, no, these liberals, all they have to do is call you a racist or fancier versions of the same word, a xenophobe, nativist, Islamophobe. When you raise concerns about the cost of refugee resettlement, security concerns, and the impact on social cohesion brought by forced multiculturalism to your communities. And the progressives left have been getting away with it, defeating us for decades by rolling out that charge. I say, call me whatever you want, then laugh at them and move on.
Yeah.
Once you defeat the power of that word by not caring that it is used against you, you win.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that's
great. We've been advising that for years.
Yeah. So when people say call you racist, bigot, just laugh at them.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden, like, oh, that didn't have any effect.
Absolutely. And we see Donald Trump not understand. Now, recently, he maybe is. I've seen some of the things where he said, like this deal with this Hillary Clinton deal, and speaking of Nevada the other day. And his reply to that was basically a no reply, you know. And I seen some of the surrogates on TV said, yeah, that's the silliest, most ridiculous thing you ever heard, and then go
right.
on. And that's the way to handle those liberals.
Yeah, absolutely.
But the thing is that a lot of that advice may be coming from the Steve Bannon from the Breitbart News, because I saw on the internet that they said Steve Bannon, he studies the tactics of the left and right. then incorporates them into the right.
Absolutely.
And so they may be seeing that, you know, and that those tactics are not really evil tactics or bad tactics. They're just tactics,
right.
you know. So not saying he's adopting evil methods. They're just tactics in political warfare. And so he just said, hey, those tactics work. We're going to use them against them.
Right. And because for the most part, you know, you get your socialists like Hillary Clinton and others, and for decades they'll call these names, they'll make fun of your so-called, you know, conservatives or racialists, whatever, they'll make fun of them, and so often your conservative movement will like kind of back down and try to apologize, and we know that for the most part these so-called liberals, they can't stand when they're being made fun of.
Yeah,
they right. can't stand when people will go back at them, you know, and not back down. They can't stand that. So when you have people laughing at them when they make those accusations, the word has no meaning anymore.
Did you see that interview with that gal who, this was about 10 days ago, where a Trump supporter, I don't know her name, but she was on interviewed on TV, and there was a Hillary Clinton supporter. They were talking about that father.
Both campaign aides and assistants. So
you,
not just
correct.
Somebody that supports
them. Correct. They were high up in the campaign. and regular guests on TV. Okay. And yeah, good point, Richard. These are regular campaign advisors for Hillary and for Donald Trump. These were not just supporters that they got off the street. And the one person asked the Hillary person, why was the father of this terrorist sitting right behind Hillary Clinton when she spoke at that rally in Florida, you know? And the person responded, said, well, because he's insane.
He's insane.
And she said, so you're saying that the people who support Hillary Clinton are insane? Oh, she was totally crazy then.
She lost it.
And she's laughing at him. So you're saying they're insane, people who support Hillary Clinton? She went bonkers.
She was like, her head was moving.
She was biting her tongue. We've showed that on White Resistance Radio last week. And people need to listen to White Resistance Radio because White Resistance News. And I'm not saying we got the network that your big TV networks have. Obviously, we can't compare with CNN or Fox News or any of these big boys. But the point is, nevertheless, because of the power of the internet today, there's been half a dozen times at least where we've had a story on in the morning that didn't hit the Fox News until that night or the next day.
Right.
And so, and that's because of the modern age in which we live in. So you are able to tap into a lot of this stuff. So we scan news stories from dozens of news agencies, and we're getting stories right off as soon as they hit the internet, even before they make it to the big boys news stations, the Fox News. We're able to capture that, and more than once we've had stories dealing with issues on our morning news that did not make Fox News or CNN until the next day.
Absolutely.
And so people really need to listen and watch White Resistance News. It's on 8:30 live every day, Monday through Friday, at whitepridetv.com, and broadcast live. Go to your internet. Go to whitepridetv.com, and you can watch a live broadcast every morning. And then these archives later in the day or the next day.
Well, and plus, that the show used to be called This is the Klan.
Correct.
And it's the 18th year.
Yeah.
And so for 18 years, we've had basically a live show on the internet, you know. And we were the very first.
We're still the only one.
We're the only one.
We were the very first one,
obviously, that took this ability to get it across the United States. You know, and we're still the only one.
Even today, I don't know of any white nationalist group that has a daily news program.
Absolutely.
I don't know of one. There may be somewhere out there, but I don't know of one. And the thing is, we're more than just we look more than just beautiful on the internet.
Right.
You know. Because we do have a brick and mortar structure, we have facilities, we have a beautiful retreat, we got a beautiful convention center, cabins, an office, a playground, a spacious parking area, spacious camping area for our RVs and tents for people to come to our conferences and so forth. So we're more than a pretty face on the internet. We are a real group of men and women, Christian men and women, who love America and have a foresight of not just where America is today. A lot of people are upset with where America is today, but do they understand the issues enough to be understand where America is going to be in 10 years from now and put yourself there so when America gets there, we're ready for it.
Right. Well, and plus, besides that, you know, we have a full-time office staff, and the headquarters here, they work with associates all across the United States, not only on literature distribution, but working with them locally in their cities, in their local towns, the issues that may be arising in those local communities. We have associates across the United States that also gather information, intel, everything in order to coordinate that with headquarters so we can every day be putting out current events that is, like you said, that is not even discussed until the next day. And so, yeah, this is where the headquarters are at, obviously, but we have a nationwide network of associates all across the United States that are working in their local communities as representatives of the Knights.
Right.
Well, you know, one of the very first things we do when someone, you know, signs up to be a volunteer with the Knights is, you know, our media campaign jump off list, which, you know, they get in the mail and they, you know, put the, and this helps them and helps us, but they get the information in their community about, you know, who their local political leaders are, the media outlets, things like that, and get that to us. And then they keep that and continue, you know, growing their file, stay on top of local issues in their community. And then we work with them to facilitate and develop a media campaign for their area that can be tied in with national issues.
Right.
And so, you know, it's, you know, and we encourage people, you know, to do that and stay abreast of what's happening in their communities. And, you know, because we're able to, you know, coordinate literature specifically about issues in their area. So, you know, there's a local impact. And again, that ties in, you know, that's one of the reasons that we do get so much media work here is because, you know, it's not just what we're doing here, but it's what associates nationwide are doing.
Absolutely. And I think that's what really, you know, sets us apart is because so often people think, okay, there's a website, some racialist website, and they think, okay, that's an organization. Well, that's not an organization. Anyone can have a website. The Knights Party, yes, we have a slew of websites and domain names, but we actually have a physical structure. We are an actual political party. We actually have associates across the United States that are actually being involved with activists and activities throughout the United States. And so there is a big difference with the Knights Party. And that is why there has been such a big increase the last several years with the Knights Party, with just the general media, because they really see the Knights being apart from everybody else, because they actually see a physical structure. And like you said, Dad, you know, when the media comes here to the headquarters, the Christian World Bible Center, and they see the beautiful campground, the retreat, it really is impressive, because there's really no other place in the United States that you can go to a white retreat and see all the infrastructures there. And the continuation of the infrastructure. Really does impress me.
If they're going to go interview anybody else at all in the entire white nationalist cause or network or whatever you want to call it.
Right.
If they're going to go interview any single one of those people, they're going to either have to meet at a restaurant, they're going to go meet at their house, they're not going to go
at a park,
to an office,
at a monument somewhere in a park.
Now I will say American Free Press, but that's a newspaper, not, you know, they have an office, but it's not, you know, an organization or.
And that's what I was kind of getting at, is you have a lot of good organizations from the standpoint of a newspaper or websites, you know, and so I'm not knocking them down.
Right,
I'm going to meet you at your website.
But what I'm saying is that's what they are. They're a newspaper. American Free Press, awesome newspaper.
Yeah.
You know, and they did a great job.
Right. And they run wonderful articles about us.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Great people.
We're not in competition with them.
No, and thank God for them.
Yeah.
But they're newspapers. There are people that has websites. Thank God for them. They're websites. But when we're talking about
an organization,
a political structure, long-term goals, a strategy, that's what really sets the Knights apart, you know, and that's what the media really is afraid of. The very extreme left, they're afraid of an organization that is on the common, reachable to the average man.
Yeah.
And
appeals to the families.
Right.
Because the battle is over the family.
Right.
And so we do get that attention, and we're really taking that very seriously, and we try to present ourselves the best light possible to reach out to people who are looking for hope, looking for some answers.
Well, you know, one of the great things I like, Rachel, you know, she always says the upside of white genocide And that's what we see is we're taking advantage of this hatred of our people. And really the first time in history is forcing our people to really look at themselves as a race. They're looking at themselves as a culture and realizing that they are actually facing genocide and being displaced out of their culture, being displaced demographically, wherever they may be at, even our European sister countries. And so when people, our white people, are actually looking at themselves as a race, that is what the enemy fears. I mean, our people start saying that.
Right. They don't want to see white people unified. They want to see English fighting the Irish and the Germans fighting the Russians, and they want to see all of that, you know, racial animosity toward each other. They don't want to see them united as a race. They want to keep them fractured.
And that's what was so the unique genius of our forefathers. And when they came to this country, they saw what had happened in Europe. And they said, in so many words, they said, here we are Americans. We come together as one people. I heard Hillary Clinton in that speech she gave in Nevada. She said a totally inaccurate historical statement. And she said, America was always, never since the time the pilgrims came here and set their foot on Plymouth Rock, America's never been a nation that tested people on their religious faith. It made no difference what religious faith you had. You're welcome to America. And that's a total lie.
Yeah.
The founding father, the state constitutions and all the actions of the founding fathers were very explicit that we were a Christian nation. Mm-hmm. But people applauded because that's what they heard in school, because the education was taken away from local control, put in the hands of the federal government. They altered education, and now we have a whole generation or two of people growing up now hearing a myth, thinking it's the reality, but it's not the reality. It's a myth, and the myth leads to destruction and leads to white genocide.
Well, I know we don't have a lot of time left, but you know, I do want to remind everybody about the conference that's coming up in just 4 days.
Yeah, don't be afraid to come. I know sometimes people, they hear the news, they see stuff on TV, and they think, I don't know, should I go there? We'll be safe. Should I take my kids? We'll be safe for them.
Well, hopefully my 10-year-old, my 7-year-old, my 4-year-old, 2-year-old, and 1-year-old, hopefully they won't cause any problems.
They will cause a problem.
I got 5 kids, and they're usually safe. Yeah.
But people need to understand the media generates this stuff to keep white people divided. They don't want white people to support efforts like the Knights Party because they want to keep you afraid that something weird or dangerous is going on here, and they want you afraid to come up and identify and unify with your own identity as a people. So don't let them control your thoughts. People need to make plans coming out here. There's lots of people listening to this broadcast right now who live within a very short distance of the center here, and they could very easily come and attend. All you have to do is go to American Save Our American Heritage, saveouramericanheritage.com, and they can register. They get more information, or kkk.com can lead you to the same information. And you need just make that decision. It may seem a little bit scary at first because you've never been connected to a so-called racist organization.
Now, there's not a bunch of people running around in Klan robes with torches and,
That's what they want you to think.
Right.
That's what they want you to think.
Where's my chainsaw? I'm going to go cut down a tree in the woods and hold me across.
Yeah.
I mean, you basically have your soccer moms and dads here. You have your moms and dads and families that are here that love the country. They love their Christian faith. They just love America. They don't want it destroyed. And that's the people that are here. That's what, we're common people.
All walks of life and educational backgrounds.
Absolutely.
And white collar and blue collar and a lot of really nice. And plus, it's not like, sometimes I think people think, they're going to come here and they're going to be the only new people and everybody else is going to be like, oh, who's that?
Staring at
them. Who are they?
Right.
I mean, that's the silliest thing I've ever heard. There's like new people all
the time.
There's new people all the time. There's going to be people you know, here for the first time, meeting other people that are here. Oh, you're from Michigan? Oh, I'm from Michigan too. Or, oh, you're from California? Well, yeah. What part of California are you from? I'm from the northern part. Oh, yeah. Down for Bakersfield.
Well, there's people that come who don't come every year.
Right.
They might come 1 year, they'll come again for another 4 years. And then somebody else may come 1 year, don't come for 4 years. And then maybe those two are never here at the same time. Yeah. So there are so many people coming and going. People that don't come or can't come every year, you know, we're centrally located. We're here purposely for that reason. But, you know, there's no such thing as being the new guy. It just, that is totally ridiculous. People come up here, as far as they know, you've probably been here for the last 3 years and they just didn't see you because they haven't been back in 4 years.
Right.
They think they're the new guy, you know. So don't feel like you're the new guy or new gal. Teenagers, come on, you got to care about your future, what kind of family you're going to have, and what kind of children you're going to have. Yeah,
take a road trip and go to the conference and meet other people. And there's going to be a lot of great music. And,
yeah, if you're under 18, we can't advise you with the following. But if you're over 18, get some of your buddies together, some of your friends together. Like what you say, Rachel, make a road trip. You three come through your buddies. You're over 18, and so you can get down here, come down here, and see what's being done for your future and for your future families.
And your parents don't care, then,
do that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, people go off to concerts all the time. So,
right.
Right.
Well, if your parents don't mind, then, make a Labor Day weekend and no school and no work. Try to take off work. Call in sick, whatever. Hey, you're sick for America.
We've only got 4 minutes, so I don't know if we really complete this next comment I'm going to make, but Tom was mentioning to me yesterday, taking off that movie, The Matrix. Yeah. He says that he's hearing about, and maybe you've heard something, the various young people are saying they're having to try to give their parents the red pill. Mm-hmm. You know, they're red pilling their parents.
Right.
Because in the movie The Red Pill was, if you took the red pill, if you saw the movie, means you became awake and alert and saw what was going on. The blue pill, you just back into sleep and just kind of accept it. And so young people are now talking about, I've got to give my parents the red pill because they're still lost in this alternative world, right. You know, and the red pill will wake them up. And so he said the term is being used by young people, I'm red pilling my parents.
Yeah.
So, anyway, it's a good thing.
With information.
Yeah, with information. So.
Not physically.
And Hillary Clinton helped that. When she spoke again, and this is kind of how we started off this discussion, so I'll end it with this. When she got up and she announced that everybody who supports Donald Trump is part of the white nationalist movement. That's what she said.
Yeah.
She didn't phrase it quite those words, but it was pretty easy to understand. If you support Donald Trump, you are part of the white nationalist, racist, alt-right. You're part of this racist movement. You're a white nationalist if you support Trump. Millions of people are sitting back home, and she broke down a barrier.
Right.
And saying, yeah, maybe I am. Yeah. Or next time they think about it, maybe I am. So anyway, thank you, Hillary. You did a great job.
Yeah, we appreciate that. keep saying those words.
Your check is in the mail. It'll be a little check. So,
anyway, real quick, and on that note, we're going to close up. European American Heritage Festival, Pulaski, Tennessee, the fourth Saturday in October. I believe that's October 22nd.
Yes.
And it's held on the square. There's a farmer's market on the other side. There's booths there with cultural history of different our people throughout the history. There's hot dogs and hamburgers. There's activities for the kids. Nice, relaxing atmosphere. There's music. Heritage Connection is going to be there playing some of their songs. And Walk for White Pride. And that's a beautiful sight to see. Seeing children carrying the flags of their ancestry, walking around, being proud of their people.
And if they don't have a flag of their ancestry, bring your state flag. Bring your, if you want to, bring the rebel flag. If you want to bring the rebel flag. And bring the Don't Tread on Me flag.
Yeah.
Bring a flag represents our people, our heritage. And we're down, but we're not out. We still have a great future for our people. And we need to pursue the objective of white Christian revival. And we can do it.
Absolutely. So mark that on your calendar and show up. That's all you have to do. Just mark it on your calendar. It's that easy.
October 22nd, Pulaski, Tennessee, is 17 miles south of Nashville. And we have a website. Don't we write you on that?
European American Heritage Festival.com or White Heritage Festival.com or White Pride Festival.com. There's a bunch of them. They're all going to take you to the same place.
WhitePrideFestival.com. That'll be probably easiest to remember. WhitePrideFestival.com. So, and remember, we're not supported by George Soros. We're not supported by any, by our enemies. We're only supported by people like you. If people like you do not support our cause and our message, then we cannot continue. So if you understand that, please hit the donate button right now, not tomorrow, not next week, right now. Go to hit the donate button and donate as much as you can, because this will help provide a future for your children. Until next time, this is Thomas Robb.
Jason Robb.
Reminding you to love your God and to love your people.